Today's podcast is brought to you by Howie's VIP Studio Visit. The Captain will be back starting the first week of May. To order your tickets before they are all sold out, go to HowieCarShow.com and click on the VIP tab. Enjoy the podcast.
She's the Boston Herald's wittiest wordsmith, the last woman standing at the Whiskey Priest. Once a very legitimate magazine that we definitely didn't make up named her the Michael Jordan of radio. Wait, don't you think we're laying it on a little thick here, Grace?
Just stick to the script.
Oh, okay. Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. In the first hour, we did a rundown of Joe Biden's speech. We have not gotten to all the audio. We will get to all of it throughout the course of the day. I promise, because I know you guys are sitting there going, we need more Joe. But I wanted to bring on someone. You guys remember last week I had Kaylin Dorr on, and he's awesome. He works for the America First Policy Institute. And my next guest is actually the president and chief executive officer of the America First Policy Institute. She's also very familiar with the Trump administration's accomplishments. Brooke Rollins, thank you so much for joining our program.
Well, it's a real honor to be with you, Grace. And I love your show. I love everything you do. And I really appreciate the opportunity to join you.
Oh, thank you so much. Brooke, the first thing I have to ask you, and I know you're not going to hold back, is what did you think of the speech last night?
Well, it was very expected, but I tell you what, I hope that the millions of people that watched it can see it for what it was. And I have to say, I think that it was the beginning of the end of the Biden administration. It was almost a suicide note in terms of them basically writing their own history of a one-year term in the White House. He opened up the floodgates of a new era of spending. He's taking our inheritance, my children's inheritance, my future grandchildren's inheritance, and he's spending it down. He's clearly not a steward of the American people. He's a steward of the special interests. I mean, we saw it over and over and over, from his plans for free health care to his plans for free child care to his plans for free college. All that really means is a complete remake of our economy and taking out from, you know, the hands of and the pockets of good Americans who work hard, who put food on their children's table, who send their kids to school, basically taking their money and redistributing it. It was really a manifesto for socialism, and the people of this country won't stand for that.
And Brooke, I was pretty amazed because some of the mainstream news networks did their polling afterwards, and the polls weren't great for Joe Biden. We know that most people watching any of those addresses, whether it's Trump or Biden, you usually get a pretty friendly audience if they're willing to sit through your entire speech. And even with that being said, he polled fairly poorly. And I started thinking about it. Everything he said was radical. I mean, from gun control to climate change, everything was radical. But to your point, I think the part of it that even, let's say, young liberal millennials probably were turned off by was the talk of taxing people, because I don't think you have to understand taxes that thoroughly to think to yourself, this is in some way at some point going to hurt my wallet too.
Well, that's right. And you know what's interesting, Grace? And I was such an honor to be President Trump's domestic policy chief. I worked alongside him for 3 years. I saw, and before that, worked in Texas on the same set of issues, right? Lower taxes, more freedom, more liberty, more prosperity for all Americans, but especially those living on the margins who need that job, that good job and good health care and school choice for their children. I mean, I did that and worked on it in Texas, continued in the White House. And the amazing thing about the last 4 years of the administration and the last administration, obviously, is what we saw in terms of results. We know what works. And so even if, say, a soccer mom from Plano, Texas, or a small business owner from Detroit, Michigan, even if they didn't love the president and didn't love the tweet, whatever it was, at the end of the day, the policies and the results of what occurred in the last 4 years were a game changer. And so I think you're right. I think the young millennials, I think the, you know, the independents who may not have loved some of the personality of the last 4 years, but really, really saw the policies working, I think they watched last night and I think they said, no, thank you. I think the sprint of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, the sprint to the left, the sprint toward socialism, the sprint toward this radical agenda. Again, I think the people won't put up with that. I think we're going to see a flip in the House and the Senate in 2 years, and I think you're going to see a take back of the White House in 4 years.
I hope you're right. I'm speaking with Brooke Rollins from the America First Policy Institute. Brooke, speaking of that, he actually did make mention of some of the economic decisions that Trump made as president. And he kind of tried, what I heard it as, is he tried to tell people that didn't really happen. You know, that prosperity we saw, that wasn't real. You know, you misjudged that. You didn't understand what was really happening was we were actually going into debt. And I'm not saying that there wasn't debt involved, but people saw their 401ks increase. People saw, you know, people get jobs and people get work. So I thought that was a really bold move by him to basically say all that good stuff that you guys liked in the Trump administration, not only are we not going to do it, but it actually never even happened.
It's so true. You know, we used to joke around in the West Wing a lot that the only Democrat we can find to say nice things about the Trump economy. And keep in mind, we had more jobs available than people to fill them. Mm-hmm. We had, before the pandemic hit, we had the best economy, arguably, certainly in the world, but potentially in the history of the world. I mean, it was remarkable to see what had been set up through deregulation and cutting taxes. But we used to joke in the West Wing that the only Democrat we can find to say positive things about the Trump economy was Barack Obama, because he tried to take credit for it.
Yeah.
I don't know, Grace, if you remember that. And,
yes.
And now you see it. Now you see it happening again. But, you know, this is the obfuscation. This is the complete smoke and mirrors that the left and the Democrats constantly play in, because they know our policies are righteous and they know what we stand for and what we accomplish for the American people is truly, truly what our founders intended. It's truly the best for all Americans. And they know that they lose if we can get the message to the people, because it really is an incredibly compelling message that, frankly, we proved out in the last 4 years. So I'm not surprised to hear Joe Biden kind of put up the smoke and mirrors on that, and we'll continue to hear it over the next few years. But it's up to us. It's up to you, Grace. It's up to the America First Policy Institute. It's up to all of your listeners to ensure that everyday Americans understand, A, what's at stake, and B, what the right solutions are.
And that's something, Brooke, that I hear from my listeners a lot, because talk radio, as great as it is, we do get a reputation for just complaining all day and, you know, playing sound cuts and poking fun, but not actually offering solutions. And I don't want to be like that. My boss, Howie Carr, has never been like that. He always tries to lift people up. And the thing I hear most from people is, well, what do we do? Well, what do we do? And I think you just pointed it out, which is you just need to keep letting people know. I tell my siblings all the time. I tell my friends all the time. I send them articles. I know it annoys them, but I want people to understand what we're dealing with, because it is very scary. And speaking of that, Brooke, I would like to play you a cut here from Joe Biden. I want to get your take. This is cut 8, Jared.
For too long, we've failed to use the most important word when it comes to meeting the climate crisis: jobs. Jobs. Jobs.
Do you think the pipeline workers would disagree with him on that?
Well, it almost, I almost can't take it seriously. It is so unbelievable. In fact, my great friend, former Secretary of Energy and Governor of Texas, Rick Perry, and I were texting back and forth last night, like, how does he even say that with a straight face? When you think about the thousands, the tens of thousands that have lost their jobs, that their jobs are on the line in Pennsylvania and Ohio and all over the country. I mean, this entire farce, you know, that's happening from the left, where we have to address the climate crisis, and in so doing, we're going to create jobs, is just insane. It's pure lunacy. And I sincerely believe the American people know better. I really do. But to your point, I think we've got to keep making sure people understand. Listen, America has the cleanest air and the cleanest water in the world, while at the same time, we became energy independent and began to move our energy, our fossil fuels, and our natural gas out of this country. Just the concept of lifting people out of poverty, while at the same time the geopolitical results of that and not being beholden to the Middle East for energy, is astonishing. And for Joe Biden to want to roll that back because Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez tells him that he has to, it's pretty heartbreaking for the country, but it is a really important opportunity to explain to Americans truly what's at stake.
Now, Brooke, I have to say this. I get very defensive of the Trump administration when they don't get credit where it's deserved. I can't imagine how you feel listening to this stuff. You must want to rip your hair out. So I'm offering that as a warning. This is going to increase your blood pressure, but I need to get your take on this because I was pretty flabbergasted. This is Nicole Wallace talking about Operation Warp Speed. This is cut 31.
So I don't know, again, on what planet we had rounded the bend. And Operation Warp Speed didn't do anything to get a needle into an arm. So a lot of disinformation.
The downplaying of the work that the Trump administration did it's kind of stunning.
Yeah, it almost stunned me into no words at all, which is pretty hard for me not to be able to find words. But I just, you know, the good news is that the Operation Warp Speed, you know, the president, I was there, the president was relentless, as he was in everything else. When they told him it would take 2 or 3 or 5 years to get a vaccine, that was the normal rate, he just said, no, that's not acceptable, and we will figure out another way. And sure enough, he did. The good news is the timeline speaks for itself. People know that hundreds of millions of doses were, you know, on trucks and in hospitals before the end of last year.
Right.
Or, Democrats and for the President Joe Biden to try to say otherwise really shows you just the complicit nature, and the media to let that message get out just shows you the complicit nature of the left and how they will say anything to win an election, whether it's true or not.
Brooke Rollins is from the America First Policy Institute. Brooke, where can people find your website and learn more about you guys?
Thank you so much. America First Policy.com and on Twitter at A1 Policy. So we'd love to have more and more friends. We can't do this unless we're all in it together, and really appreciate your time today, Grace.
Thank you so much, Brooke. It's a great organization. Everyone should definitely follow them. I've learned a lot just from checking out their website, so I highly recommend it. Now, we got to talk about free lunch. You heard a lot about free lunches during a Biden speech yesterday. Everything's a free lunch when you're a Democrat, but there's hope for conservatives. We are offering a free lunch here at the Howie Carr Radio Network. I've had my fair share of free lunches during my time at the Howie Carr Radio Network, so I can say this with confidence. Nothing beats Aviva Trattoria. I'm actually going to Aviva Trattoria in person tomorrow night, and I might get myself a cocktail. After, you know why, Jared? Because I sat through 20 to 25 minutes of Joe Biden. I'm getting a Cosmo. And if you guys want to check it out, I know you heard our VIPs call in this week. They raved about Aviva. It's absolutely delicious. You can win your VIP experience by going to gracecurlyshow.com and entering in your email. If you want in, all you have to do is go to gracecurlyshow.com and sign up. I'll be selecting a winner tomorrow. I can't wait. And when Marcy comes in, she brings the most amazing food. My new favorite is the Eggplant Club. It sounds wild, but it's so delicious. Jared's a big fan of the pizza. We get calamari. We actually have the VIPs choose so that we get a few mystery items. They also have 4 convenient locations in Marlboro, Maynard, Rentham, and Westford. Takeout is available too. So to enter to win the Aviva VIP lunch, go to gracecurlyshow.com. That's gracecurlyshow.com. We'll be back on the other side. I'm going to open up the lines for the rest of the show. We have a lot more to get to. We're going to play a lot of Tim Scott as the show goes on. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Follow Grace on Twitter at @G_Curley. Grace Curley. She's here for the love.
Would I rather be feared or loved? Easy, both. I want people to be afraid of how much they love me.
All right. I know I make a lot of references about The Office, the show The Office. I know I do. But it's my favorite show. And I have to say, Andrew Cuomo is becoming more and more like Michael Scott as time goes on. He can't stop himself. He keeps talking and he's just digging himself into a hole. He'll ask himself questions and then he'll answer them. And it's really unraveling. Like, you see a man who is completely unraveling on stage in front of a microphone. And it's kind of, you know, if he wasn't so disliked, I think people would find it a little bit alarming. But instead, we're just like, keep talking, bro. Keep talking. We're writing everything down. You know, he'll ask himself, like, you know, do I touch people? You know, that's the kind of questions he asks himself. I keep being like, ask yourself about the nursing home scandal. We'll have this investigation wrapped up in a couple hours if he keeps asking himself all these questions and answering them. This is his latest unhinged rant. Take it away, Jared.
Because whether you died in a nursing home or you died in a hospital, that is very, who do you attribute that death to? Do you attribute it to a nursing home or do you attribute it to a hospital? How about if you were in a nursing home and got sick and then were sent to a hospital and you died in the hospital? Who do you attribute that death to? Well, I think that should be a nursing home death. Okay. How about if you were in a hospital and sent to a nursing home and you died in the nursing home? Who do you attribute that death to? A nursing home or a hospital?
It's not good.
Let's make it easy, Love Gov. We'll attribute them all to you. How about that?
He's like a drunk uncle at Thanksgiving who's trying to explain something to everyone. And I mean that no disrespect to uncles, because most people don't even have that. But I'm just saying, he's like that crazy relative who just keeps going and going. And everyone's kind of nodding, hoping that he's going to stop soon. And he's like, no, I have another point to make. He thinks he can clear this up with a couple conversations in front of a mic. Like, this is a bigger issue than he thinks. Lou, you're next with Grace on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Lou.
How you doing, Grace? This thing with Biden, he was talking about the thing about climate. The word is jobs, 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 right?
Right.
The word is hacks, hacks, hacks.
Mm-hmm.
That thing is nothing but a great big hackathon. And the thing is that they're not even talking about fixing the climate anymore, because I don't know if you saw this or not, but Senator Kennedy, I think he's from Louisiana, he was grilling one of these guys talking about the new Green Deal and what it's going to do. And he kept asking him, How much of the temperature is going to be lowered in the world because of this? They couldn't answer, because it's zero. They're not going to be able to lower any temperature. And the other thing is all this stuff with the child care and all this other stuff. Remember how the VA was run under Obama? That's how your child care is going to be run under the Biden Democrat plan. It's nothing but a joke. And I wish that Senator Scott, who gave a great speech and who could probably beat Biden right now by winning 60% of the vote or more, if he came out and did it. Senator Scott left out the main thing that we need to go after the Democrats on: defund the police, because they're the defund the police party. They hate the police party, they hate the Trump voters party, and this business that he's always talking about conservatives love this thing. That's from Obama. I'd like to find one conservative that's a communist like he is.
No, you're absolutely right. And I saw a lot of people saying that he was taking a lot of pages from the Obama playbook, setting up straw men, you know, talking about letters he gets from, you know, teachers and all this stuff. It was very, very Obama-esque. Of course, it wasn't as charming or as eloquent because it was all being said by Joe Biden. But no, you hit the nail on the head, Lou. I totally agree. Annie, you're next with Grace and the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Annie.
Hi. I just wanted to say, I didn't know if you knew about Representative Lauren Boebert bringing the Mylar blanket to troll Biden about the crisis at the border, and she took it out and it was all crinkly, and I thought it was great.
Yeah, she is definitely a fiery lady. She doesn't hold back, and it was interesting. I mean, there was no real meat to anything he talked about as far as the crisis on the border. Annie, I don't know if you saw this, but according to Politico, we shouldn't even be using that word anymore. That word is no good. We'll be back on the other side. We'll take some more of your calls. We will get to Tim Scott's speech on the other side. I promise you that. This is the Grace Curley Show.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio.
Everybody who watched Joe Biden's speech in person, and it wasn't a lot of people, they were all fully vaccinated. And because we live in crazy land, USA, they all had masks on and they all did the elbow tap bump fist things. I hate all of it. I hate all of it. I just saw a guy in the hallway and he was going to the bathroom and he said, "Oh, sorry, I forgot my mask." And you know what I said, Jared? I said, "I love it." And then just for good measure, I said, "I love it. I hate these masks." And I'm getting to the point, I'm getting frustrated. And I don't think it sends a good message when a bunch of fully vaccinated adults don't feel comfortable sitting 6 feet apart without their masks on. You know, we got to start. They keep saying it's all about the optics. It's all about sending a message. You guys are sending a message. It's just not the message you think you're sending. You're sending a message that you're all nuts. All right, now, I do want to get to Senator Tim Scott's rebuttal speech, which I am biased, but I thought was way better than Joe Biden's actual speech. And Jared, in case I am skipping over a gem in the Joe Biden speech, please let me know. But I am going to move on a little bit here to Tim Scott. He has a very interesting history, interesting background. And I just want to run through here the Glenn Kessler of it all, because I follow the media very closely. I know that not everyone is as lucky to follow the likes of Glenn Kessler on Twitter like I am. So I just want to give a quick recap. Senator Tim Scott gave a speech at the, the RNC, I believe. And he said, "My family went from cotton to Congress in one generation because his grandfather picked cotton." Glenn Kessler, the white, progressive, woke, probably rich writer for the Washington Post, came out with a story where he said, "There's more to this tale." And he proceeded to do his strange version of a fact check. There were no facts that needed to be checked, as in they were incorrect, but he just wanted to add some nuance. And the nuance that Glenn Kessler came up with is, yeah, everything Tim Scott says about his grandfather is true, but the farm that he picked cotton on was actually a farm their family owned. In other words, was it the 1800s in South Carolina and was it Jim Crow South? Yes. But they own land, so their story of oppression and racism in the South is not as valuable to Glenn Kessler. He doesn't think they qualify for the oppression Olympics, is his point, basically. And it's really the most racist thing you've ever heard, because it's like, wait a second. Senator Tim Scott actually has a remarkable story of the American dream. And it's very moving, no matter what side of the aisle you're on. It's very moving. The Democrats prefer tales like Elizabeth Warren of people who have to pretend to have incredible stories, but who are pretty mediocre. So Glenn Kessler put that out. And Tim Scott actually brought it up because it was so offensive. And he told the story of his grandfather, and then he also brought this up. But let's play first Cut 20. This is Tim Scott.
"Nowhere do we need common ground more desperately than in our discussions of race. I have experienced the pain of discrimination. I know what it feels like to be pulled over for no reason, to be followed around a store while I'm shopping. I remember every morning at the kitchen table, my grandfather would open the newspaper and read it, I thought. But later I realized he had never learned to read it. He just wanted to set the right example. I've also experienced a different kind of intolerance. I get called Uncle Tom and the N-word by progressives, by liberals. Just last week, a national newspaper suggested my family's poverty was actually privilege. Because a relative owned land, generations before my time. Believe me, I know firsthand, our healing is not finished.
And that kind of intolerance that Tim Scott has encountered from liberals, they are, they're not afraid to show you it at every step of the way, because after he made that speech, there were a lot of hot takes that soured quickly. There were a lot of deleted tweets. That's one thing. I delete tweets sometimes if I have a spelling error or whatever, but I never delete a tweet where I'm like, oh, I might get axed for this. You should take more than a second to think about the tweet, which obviously Scott Nevins did not do. Scott Nevins is a TV personality and host. He's a blue check. He's a LGBTQ news contributor. And this is what he wrote. Senator at Tim Scott is Uncle Tomming it right now for his life. So sad. South Carolina should be so ashamed. Naturally, people were offended by that because it's grotesque and racist. And this is what he came out with after. Tonight, I tried to do an ironic joke about Senator Tim Scott using the term Uncle Tom in his rebuttal. Well, I was shocked by his lack of self-awareness. I should have not used that term myself, even in reference. That was not right. I apologize.
Oh, the old botched joke.
Everybody knows I botched the joke.
Oh, you botched the joke, all right, Scott. And he, you notice how he says, tonight I tried to do an ironic joke? Well, he's tried to do this ironic joke many times before, talking about Ben Carson. You know, people go on the Twitter, what would you call it, Jared, the Wayback Machine, and they find the old tweet. Sean Davis from The Federalist pulled up several old tweets where he talked about different black men who he called Uncle Tom. And my favorite response was Derek Hunter, who said, dude, you are a racist piece of bleep. Just own it. It's not like the left will hold you accountable for it. You're on their team, and their team is a bunch of racist pieces of bleep. Own it. You'll probably get work out of this if you do. But he wasn't the only one. You notice that? They all make these, you know, I usually say mistakes. Mistakes like assuming that a shooter's white or, you know, mistakes. They make these updates and corrections. Crowbar versus Probar. You've seen it a million times. But they all make the same mistakes, which tells you a lot. And in this case, they all make the same ironic jokes, because that's the new thing we're going to call these. So, but maybe the best one was Keith Olbermann. Keith Olbermann, who, his voice, Jared, goes right through me. It seems, it's almost like a mix of Joe Scarborough and Steve Schmidt or something. It's very blustering, and it's very over the top. He said, Senator Scott insisting America is not racist, but our healing from racism isn't finished, and he's being called racist names. Incidentally, Senator, anybody calls you the N-word is a friend of Trump's. We progressives refer to you as a victim of Stockholm Syndrome.
Racism.
Isn't it so nice that these white, rich, liberal, arrogant losers can be racist and nobody seems to care?
We don't refer to you by these terms. We refer to you as Stockholm Syndrome. How is that different than Uncle Tom, honestly? Like, in that context, how is that any different? Like,
David,
what is the distinction here?
David Marcus wrote, is there anything white progressives enjoy more than telling black people how to think? It's
absolutely true.
It's true. They're so woke. They're so woke that they think they can get away with this. One woman actually wrote, I don't have it here, but she wrote, basically, these white liberals are way too comfortable calling people Uncle Tom. It's a racial slur. And they're using it. I don't care if you think you're using it ironically, whatever. If someone disagrees with you, don't use a racial slur. How's that? I didn't need to take critical race theory to learn that either. Here I am, credulous boomer rube, watching NASCAR all day, drinking Mountain Dew, and I know more. I'm more tolerant than, what's his name here? Let's see, Scott Nevins. It blows my mind. I want to play a little bit more of this here. Let's go to cut 22, please.
100 years ago, kids in classrooms were taught the color of their skin was their most important characteristic. And if they looked a certain way, they were inferior. Today, kids are being taught that the color of their skin defines them again. And if they look a certain way, they're an oppressor. From colleges to corporations to our culture, people are making money and gaining power by pretending we haven't made any progress at all, by doubling down on the divisions we've worked so hard to heal. You know this stuff is wrong.
It absolutely is wrong. And he's right. He's right, because the left wants America divided. They like this division. It's why right after the George Floyd verdict came out for Derek Chauvin, the immediate response was, this is not justice. And then they started redefining what justice is. Because God forbid we see that the system actually might work. That's their worst nightmare. Tim Scott did a phenomenal job. I'll play some more of that on the other side. I also want to play a little bit of Joe Biden, because you know what is a point I almost forgot about, which Sean Davis brings up, is he's talking about gun control. And you know what? You know who he didn't mention one time? My favorite new professor at Tulane, Hunter Biden. He didn't get one shout out from the big guy during the speech. And I'm not okay with that. We'll be back on the other side. I also have a hilarious, hilarious, delusional take from Joe Biden's favorite conservative, the one woman he goes to get the yes or no on his policy ideas, Jennifer Rubin. You're not going to believe this. We'll be back on the other side. This is The Grace Curley Show.
You can call her late for dinner. Just don't call her Gracie. It's The Grace Curley Show. She's the friend you never knew you needed.
What? Did we just become best friends?
Yep.
Okay, make that best friend. It's Grace Curley.
All right. Jared didn't do it justice. There's a video out of Joe Biden outside with a mask on, which drives me bonkers, picking a dandelion for Jill. And the media is like, oh, what a moment we've captured.
Remember when Trump and Melania weren't holding hands when they were getting a divorce?
Here's my issue. Here's my issue. I have several, in case you guys haven't figured it out. This shift in the way they're covering Joe Biden is embarrassing. I feel embarrassed for them. I really do. And I encourage you all to read my Spectator piece, because I put it more eloquently in writing. But it's so blatant. It's kind of gross. It makes me gag. And all this stuff that he talks about, like, I do want to play a couple cuts here. First of all, I want to play again, Jared, the cut about the Civil War, not because of the ludicrousy of that comment, but because of the family Bible part, because I notice he always tries to do these folksy, like, old school 1950s America glass milk bottle type deal. Listen to this.
100 days since I took the oath of office and lifted my hand off our family Bible and inherited a nation, we all did, that was in crisis. The worst pandemic in a century. The worst economic crisis since the Great Depression. The worst attack on our democracy since the Civil War.
The family Bible stuff it's a little overplayed.
Tell me who gets the family Bible.
He's so corny. That's what he is, Jared. It's just corny. And then listen, he does it again. He's cut 12.
When I spoke with Gianna Floyd, George Floyd's young daughter, she's a little tyke, so I was kneeling down to talk to her.
She's a little tyke, so I was kneeling down to talk to her. There's nothing about him to me that is authentic at all.
Yeah, what do their hair smell like, Joe?
Ugh. And it is true. I mean, I don't want to be mean, but when I hear him talking about kneeling down and talking to, you know, children. I do think of all those pictures online where he's sniffing people's hair. We'll get into that another day. Today's poll question is brought to you by Old New England Soap. Old New England Soap makes the best wood wick soy candles that burn for up to 100 hours, as well as goat milk soaps, bath bombs, and now ordering gift sets for Mother's Day and any occasion. Go to oldnewenglandsoap.com. Jared Diglio, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
How much of Joe Biden's address did you watch? 0 to 5 minutes, 10 to 20 minutes, 20 to 40 minutes, or the whole thing?
What was the 20 to 40? Was that an option?
Yes.
Yeah. 20 to 40, but I'm on the lower end of that. I was more towards 20, 25.
93% of the audience say they watched 0 to 5 minutes.
Wow.
4% say they watched the whole thing. 2% say they watched 10 to 20 minutes. And only 1% say they watched 20 to 40 minutes.
All right. So I have a few teases I gave in the last segment that I want to follow up on. One is I do want to talk a little bit more about Biden's comments on gun control. I do believe, Jared, that is either cut 15 or 16.
These kinds of reasonable reforms have overwhelming support from the American people, including many gun owners. The country supports reform this, and Congress should act. This shouldn't be a red or blue issue. And no amendment to the Constitution is absolute. You can't yell fire in a crowded theater. From the very beginning, there were certain guns, weapons, that could not be owned by Americans. Certain people could not own those weapons ever.
All right. Yeah, we get it. Sean Davis writes, we'll know Joe Biden is serious about enforcing America's gun laws when his son, Hunter, is indicted by DOJ for lying on a federal background check form to purchase a gun he was legally prohibited from possessing. There's no Hunter Biden exception to background check laws. Boom. This is why there's some days I steer clear of Twitter, but people really do. Nobody misses a beat, you know, between the people at the Federalist and Red State and Spectator. They're all over it. Ben Dominich wrote, I never thought I would be more disgusted by the Biden presidency than the Obama presidency, but the combo of race baiting inauthenticity and meandering corporatist decay is uniquely gross. What a pathetic slurring mismatch of culture war and money machine going brr, yelled into an echoing chamber of performative COVID theatrics. It really was COVID theatrics. And he's doing it again because when he's walking out with the dandelion, picking the dandelion for Dr. Jill, he's got the mask on outside. And I thought the whole point of the mask outside the last time was so that you could watch him take it off inside. Am I wrong? What am I missing, Jared?
Apparently the charm of this administration.
I'm missing the charm. I got to say this, though, guys. I wish nothing more than I wish I could be brainwashed into being a liberal. Because everyone's on your side if you're a liberal. And everything's so lovely. Rome is burning around us, but Joe Biden's picking dandelions. Guys, when we get back, I want to talk about whether or not people are waking up to this. Whether or not your friends who voted for Joe are regretting their decision. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. It's the Grace Curley Show.